Caroline, Willie D. Mays, Brian Callahan is up at the podium, so we send it over to him now.
You know, just like any competition, there's going to be ups and downs. There'll be days when you guys come out and one looks better than the other, and the evaluation is a totality of all their time in the offseason, in training camp, and in the preseason games. And so it's an ongoing evaluation, and there's going to be ebbs and flows, and guys will look good one day and not as good the other. And so you're trying to get their totality of work as to who's best equipped to be the number two.
Uneducated eye, obviously, but it looks like Malik, his base is way wider than the other two. Is he working on something there?
No, he's not working. He's actually one of the more natural footwork and base guys. Just it comes very easy to him. I wouldn't say he's overly wide. Nothing that would be problematic to my eye at this point. You know, I think that he's had a couple really good days, and he's had some throws that he'd like to have back, I think, at this point. But so that's the whole process, and it's new for all these guys. It's a new system, a new way of doing things, and so there's going to be ups and downs, and there'll be days where guys excel and days where guys might struggle. So, you know, sort of it's a marathon for us at this point to make sure where we need to be by September.
Last year there were times that Will, it seemed like he would maybe pull the trigger a hair late and make up for it with just how fast he can get the ball there.
Sure.
Have you guys been working through the timing? That's also a mental thing, I'm sure, but where do you see him in terms of progressing there?
Yeah, doing a good job. There's some timing things, like, for example, yesterday in the red zone, you know, it might have been like the first or second time he might have repped a particular play, so it's all very new. And he was probably late on two or three throws down there on some new concepts that he hadn't banked the reps on, and so the hope is that you point it out the first time and you say, this is the timing he needs to be on. He sees where the window is at when the window is open. And then you keep working on that and you keep pushing that timing, because everything about how you play football in the NFL at the quarterback spot in the drop back game is very, very heavily timing based. And your feet got to be right. The processing of what you see has to happen fast. And then you got to trust what you see when you make the throw. It's, you know, the old adage, a lot of quarterbacks try to wait to see guys come open, and you're trying to anticipate when they're going to be open. And that's a maturation process for a quarterback. And so the fun part is, like, he sees it and he understands it when it's not exactly right. And then he usually makes an adjustment the next time out. And so you take a red zone play, for example, the first day he runs it, maybe it's not great and the timing's not where you want it to be. And then, you know, we've repped it 4, 5, 6 more times before the season starts, and now you start to feel that timing, and he starts to feel it and see it. It's a rep thing. It's an experience process, and so that part's fun. I mean, that's the coaching part for me. That's where I enjoy.
I guess Stone, you talk about Stonehouse being in the building every day. You talked about that when we first got here. With him, is it now just trying to be patient, or are you optimistic about him looking way down the road, or is it still too early?
Yeah, it's too early to tell. I mean, the injury is obviously significant enough to, you know, to where he's still out at this point. He is rehabbing. He's doing a great job in his rehab process. We'll see where we get to when we report to training camp on where that's at. His progress has been really good. You guys have seen him kind of out walking around a little bit. He has been working, and, you know, it's going to be a matter of when the doctors clear it, when we get to training camp, and then when he feels confident enough. And I've been with enough guys that have done knee injuries where there's also a mental factor in the return, is the confidence backed in the injury. Sometimes it takes, even though they're medically fine and cleared, you got to work through the mental part of knowing that you're fine. I've seen a lot of guys have take some time to get through that process too. So we'll see where he's at in training camp. I think that's probably the best way to put it.
Would you ever potentially, with your, you know, brand new drafted rookie, run like a tackle screen, you know, utilize his speed and space, ability and space?
Do you want to give everything away now? Thanks, JC.
Quickly, you've had some coaches come in for the Bill Walsh Fellowship program. How important is it for that program, and how important is for you to have those, that help here?
It's a fantastic program. You know, I've come across multiple guys over my time in the league that have, in a sense, graduated from that program, where they've made impressions, they've made relationships, and it's given them opportunities to get jobs in the NFL, which is ultimately what it's for, is exposing guys to the NFL, to the way of our coaching processing, and then a chance to get to meet people. You know, it's a networking and relationship business too, and so let those guys meet people. Obviously, Clint McMillan was a guy that was in the Bill Walsh Fellowship program and ended up getting hired from it. So they're great opportunities. They're competitive jobs to get now. I mean, these internships, you know, we'll have hundreds of applicants trying to get a chance to come in here. And so they're very competitive. And the guys that we bring in, we feel like can, one, help us for the time they're here, and two, that they got futures as really bright coaches in the NFL. So it's great to have those guys.
Speaking of JC, is it hard to kind of get a gauge on how well that transition's going when you're not wearing pads and so forth? Or are there things you can still pick up?
There's things you can pick up. You know, I think there's a movement, and a mental component that you feel like as you watch it that feels good. Does he know what to do, where to go? Those things are the first things. And then you see the technique start to come along. And everything I've seen so far has been really pretty dang good for a guy making that transition for the first time playing on the left side in a while. And, you know, again, a lot more will be revealed as we get going. But everything would indicate so far that he's up to the task. There's been you know, there's not anything that would have been alarming at this point that he couldn't make the transition. And so far, everything's been about what you would hope it would be.
All right, there you go. That was Titans head coach Brian Callahan with a little bit of J.C. Latham popping in there asking a question.
Yeah, J.C., that's his personality coming out, you know. And I don't know if coach expected that. he probably saw him back there, but didn't think. He would ask a question, but it's just his personality come out. It seemed like it was a really good question. Coach is like, oh, you're giving it away, huh, already? I was like, okay. But the stuff that he said about Will, and I think he's just sort of in a different way regurgitating what we said yesterday and some of what we said today or earlier, this is a process for this team. In particular, it's a process for the young offense, and then even more than that, if you want to go even micro, it's a process for the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Some days are going to be great, and some days are going to be frustrating as a coach, as a player. That's why we have these camps. So now you got to sort of fight through that process, because regardless if you are, you know, an all-pro at the position – or you're a rookie, when a new offense is presented to you, it's going to take some time for you to grasp it. I saw Steve McNair go through it in Baltimore. Hell, I saw him go through it here when Heimerdinger first got hired as offensive coordinator. There's a process that you have to go through, and Steve had been in the league 4 or 5 years already. So all quarterbacks in a new offense has to go through this process of knowing and understanding there's going to be some really good days, but there are going to be more bad days to start off than good days. And you just got to weather through that, knowing that we're going to eventually pick this up as a team. If we just stick to the plan, continue to put in the hours, we are going to get where we want to get because we have the players to do it. Now, if you didn't have the players, then I'd be a different story. But yeah, looking at the Titans roster, the frontline guys, top 11 on offense, it seems like they have the players. It's just getting yourself acclimated and familiar with the playbook. And as you do that, you start to get more comfortable in what you're doing. And I'm sure that's what Brian Callahan is looking at from the standpoint of Will.
It does sound like, just from some of the questions that were asked to Brian Callahan, that maybe it wasn't the greatest day. Mm-hmm. Brian Callahan said, look, it was a little kind of rough in red zone. But, D-Maze, just from your experience, and this is – is it easier to learn a new defense than new offense? Is it quicker to click? Not easy isn't a fair word to use. Is it click quicker?
The perception is it is. And from my experience, not to say that it's easier, but defense, it's just a chaotic, controlled chaos. It's just controlled chaos with them.
You don't know where you're going.
Yeah, you don't know, but you know, like, for instance, like one guy on the defensive line, they can be calling you a stunt one way. One guy can go the other way and get a sack, you know. You do that on offense, quarterback's getting hit in the back of the head. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fumble or an interception, something like that. You have a little bit more leeway at the beginning for defenses than you do for offenses, because offense is timing. Everything is timing with offense. No matter what system you're running, it's all about timing. I'm not sure, and, you know, would love to have, you know, throw this out to a defensive player. Defense isn't about timing. Offense is all time in a rhythm, yeah. Your chemistry.
You're trying to disrupt time.
Exactly. Defense, you're trying to disrupt that timing. So it's a little bit, it's not easier, but the adjustment period the learning curve isn't as difficult on all defense as it is on offense, I believe. Now, the defensive players, they may tell you different. But from my experience, wherever I've been, the defense seems to pick up, especially if you have good players, the defense tend to pick it up quicker than the offense does. Because, again, the offense is about timing and rhythm. And if me as a defensive player can disrupt that rhythm, that's all we need to do. And then expect those guys up front to get to the get to the quarterback. But, yeah, I would tend to say it's a little bit more difficult from an offensive standpoint when things are new as opposed to a defense.
Multi-layered.
Yeah, but they still have a lot to learn on defense.
Yeah.
But on offense, it's all about timing and rhythm and repetition over and over again. Like you can throw a guy out there at corner and just say, just play man.
Keep up with him.
Just play man over there or play cover two. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll play cover two. You can't throw a receiver out there and just say, run a route, run a slant. Well, what if he jumps inside? What if it's cover two? What if it's press man? What do you want me? How am I going to run this route? I actually play cover two. There's only one way we can play cover two. There's no difference. I don't care what they're running. One way you can play cover two. There's no other way. Well, as opposed to a receiver, well, I got to run this route predicated on the defense. What do I do here? Should I adjust it? Should I not? There's a lot of other factors that go into it.
So it would make sense, at least by that logic, mm-hmm. that the defense looks to be two or three steps ahead of the offense at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, unless you have a veteran offense without, any newness to it, then they just pick up where they left off last year. But even that, there's still going to be a period of those new guys mm-hmm. getting acclimated to what's going on as opposed to defense. Listen, they got a lot of stuff to learn, but, it's not rhythm-based in a sense.
Yeah, looking at some of TD's practice reports, he said the defense owned the day yesterday, but offense looked much better today. We're not out there. Mm-hmm. I will take TD by his word because there is nobody that I trust more in their practice reports more than TD, unless it's Jim Wyatt.
Yes.
But looking at some more of TD's reports, Harold Landry took part in 7-on-7 for the first time. Good to see that. Mm-hmm. Will Levis opened 7-on-7 with a well-placed back shoulder throw to Josh Wiley for a big gain. Levis to Nick Wisperkakine on a diving catch under Treylon Burke's clear out. Thomas Odukoya caught a seam pass from Mason Rudolph. Had to get it. Had his get some wear shoes on.
Had his get some wear shoes on. Like he
had
got
his get some wear shoes on. There it is. Thank you. Had his get some wear shoes on and ran away with the defense for a touchdown. Rudolph hit Kyle Phillips for a long gain along the sidelines a couple plays later. Interesting, Kyle Phillips working with the twos. Levis hit Chigakonkwo on a seam a little behind him, but he caught it and ran a bit. Offense looked much better today, and the last couple of periods were helmetless walkthrough addressing specific situational football. Really, my biggest takeaway there is defense won the day yesterday. Offense looked a little bit better mm-hmm. today, and per Brian Callahan, struggled a bit in red zone, mm-hmm. But to be expected when the offense shrinks a bit.
Yeah,
the field shrinks a bit.
It does. And this is what you are looking for as a head coach or position coach. It don't matter. You're looking for, hey, listen, there are going to be days where the defense gets the best of us, but we got to come back the next day and we got to build, or we got to make sure we do the things that sort of allows us to grow as an offense. Mm-hmm. If it looks like it did yesterday, we're not getting anywhere. There's no progression. Each and every day, it has to be a progression. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a whole period. It could be a throw that Will Levis made yesterday that he didn't connect on. Well, we come back, we run that play again. Today, now he connect on it. Why? Because now we went back to the film room. We watched the film. We've dissected. We let him know, hey, listen, if this is not there, look at how they're playing the defense. You may have to go another way, or you may have to throw it to a different area of that person's circumference. So, the second day, that's what you want to see. That they may not have dominated the whole practice, but if you see instances where they've gotten better, then that's all you want to see as a coach.
Yeah. In terms of attendance, and look, these mini camps are mandatory, so all of the names that are listed here, I believe, are probably just inside getting work and doing stuff on the side. Tavondre Sweat, Kiaris Jackson, and Nicholas Petit-Frere rehabbing inside, just not out on the field. Whatever they were doing, I would assume that they're in the building since they've been in the buildings. They haven't been on the field throughout minicamp, but not out on the field. When we look ahead to OTAs, which will start next Monday through next Thursday, I'm going to want to start to see me some Tavondre Sweat on the field.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can only sort of assume why he's not on the field. I'm not sure if it's a major injury, because I think if it was a major injury, we would have known about it somehow, some way. Mm-hmm. I think it's precautionary. There may be a slight injury there. I'm thinking soft tissue possibly.
And Brian Callahan said, and Paul Kuharsky reported, it was minor.
Yeah, so
Longer he's out leads me to believe, okay, maybe it's not minor. Or maybe I think it's something minor, else.
But I think some of it has to do with his weight too. I think they're trying to prepare. Like, when you get a guy that's coming out of college that big, you got to make him understand and let him know, like this is your job now. We got to prepare you to play 17, 18, 19, 20 games. And at 350, 360, you can't do it. You can't play. We could put you in a play, then we got to take you out. Put you in another play. We can't do that. You have to at least be able to play three or four plays back to back to back, and then we'll give you a break. I think what they're trying to work on is conditioning. They're trying to help drop this weight. Again, there may be a soft tissue injury there. But if you feel that he's not at the weight you want him at, you're not then going to throw him back out there on the field, because what he's going to do is just re-injure whatever is going on. It's minor now. You throw him back out on that field, it's going to go from minor to major. So, again, we don't need to rush him out there. We're going to slowly bring him on. But I do hope to see him out there next week.
I agree. I do think, though, that if it is soft tissue, and there would be a lot – this is all speculative.
Yeah.
But it would seem like that is a wise thing to do. Trevor made this point yesterday, or I guess it was 2 days ago. We talked a lot about what Trevor said about Treylon Burks. I thought he made a good point about Sweat, and that is at this time of the year, the worst thing that you can do for a soft tissue injury is to have a setback.
Yeah,
and if you. Let's just say it's a hamstring. I don't know if it is or not, but that's the type of injury that you might think you're feeling pretty good, and you're telling the coaches, it feels good today. Let's go. All right, get out there, rookie. We need you out there. Mm-hmm. It's an easy one to re-aggravate. And then especially for a guy with his unique dimensions, shall we say?
He's
that's
large.
That's a good way to say it, yeah. Willie.
He's very large.
I mean, that
he's overweight.
For him, it might be longer than somebody else. You know, I don't know, but these are all reasons why maybe they're slow walking it a little bit in June. So you're trading off the question mark that's getting larger and larger. Oh, boy, he still hasn't been out there. What's the deal? This was the tag on him from the start, and here we go. Mm-hmm. You're trading that off for this is what I have to do to get this guy ready to go so that we have a chance, right? We cannot have him start training camp with a major soft tissue injury that we made worse by rushing him back out there. It's not perfect. We all wished he would come in
ready to go.
But this is not that.
But when in drafting a guy like Sweat, that that the weight can become an issue, you have to know going in, okay, we're drafting this guy. How do we bring him along in our program? You have to have that conversation before you even draft a guy. Because he's a large individual, and you know what weight he needs to play at in order to be effective. He can play at 360, but he's only going to be effective for not even half the game, a quarter of the game,
and
maybe.
Supposedly, he even played at 380 at Texas.
Yeah,
that has
large
been
and in charge.
Yeah, so you have to, in knowing the opportunity to draft him, you have to have a plan in place for him, if indeed you draft him. So I'm sure they got a plan in place, and this is part of the plan. Like, 30 years ago, they probably would have just threw him out there. And, like, you gonna play your way into shape.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do. You can't do that nowadays. The money's too great. And more importantly, these young men's health is too important to throw them out there and just say, you work through it. No, we got to bring him on in a way that we feel is going to be beneficial for him, but then ultimately beneficial for us.
Yeah, and you are doing now what you have to do to make sure that T'Vondre Sweat can be effective for 3 downs in 17 games, mm-hmm. or as many games as possible. That it's not a, all right, is T'Vondre Sweat playing today? Let's check the injury report. Is T'Vondre Sweat on? Like, that's that I think is probably not our worst nightmare about mm-hmm. T'Vondre Sweat, but it's definitely up there and definitely a fear that I had when the Titans drafted him at 38. You know, at 38, that's essentially back of the first round. Like, this guy needs to be effective for you. This guy needs to be able to contribute right away. So whatever you have to do to make sure that T'Vondre Sweat is available and effective, you're going to do it, especially at this point in time.
Yeah.
But this is where the red flags, this is where the worry stems from. This is where the red flags came up, that is this going to continue to be a thing for T'Vondre Sweat? I hope not. I hope not. And the last thing that I want people to say is, you're always talking about T'Vondre Sweat. He's not out there. Well, that's the reason why we were concerned when they drafted him in the first place.
I wonder if they had any problems with him in Texas. Because there's two guys in all of college football that I, like, remember. And not because of their name, but because of their girth. The kid out of Florida, the big,
like 400-pound defensive lineman.
Who wore, like, what, number 21?
I think it was 21 or 40, something like that. Him and T'Vondre Sweat, because they were large human beings, and their shirt didn't even fit them.
They were big.
And their pants probably had to have two pants stitched together. That's how big they were. But they were they're hell of a players. Uh-huh. But once you step up in competition, you can't expect to stay that large and be able to be effective as much as they want you to be. You can do it, possibly do it in college, because you're probably better than everybody on the offensive line. Yeah. So you just use your girth and weight and just push people and let everybody. You can't do that in the NFL. Mm-hmm. There are guys that are just, from a technique standpoint, they don't care how big you are, they're going to find a way to move you. So he has to find a way to drop that weight to be able to play consistently good football, not T'Vondre Sweat, not because this is what the scouting report is going to be. If he doesn't drop the weight, it's going to be T'Vondre Sweat is a hell of a player, but he's only going to give them one or two plays per every two or three series.
Great player, thicker than a Snicker,
exactly. And he ain't gonna give you much once he get tired.
Yeah.
So
he's going to be a guy that never can play in a two-minute drill. Yeah.
Never, if he doesn't get down on his weight. Because in 2 minutes, we're going. We don't have time to be switching back and forth.
And the 38th overall pick, you need to be a three-down kind of player.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, first and second down, take him off the field on third. I understand that's going to happen at some points. But you need to have the ability and to have the endurance to be able to be a third down kind of – all three-down kind of player. But he's going to have to be out there at some point. I understand, you know, whatever's going on. Brian Callahan said it was minor. But, I mean, okay, he spends the rest of the offseason, you know, inside and dropping the weight. Okay, he drops the weight and gets to a healthy playing weight. Okay, well, now it's August 16th.
Yeah.
And it's your first opportunity to get out on the field. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's just, you know, that's what I fear.
There's a possibility.
Yeah.
That can happen, and you don't want to even reach a point where that possibility is even close to happening. So you're trying to do everything right now to prevent it. That's why, to me, I'm not going to be too alarmed about this right now. But like you said, once we get into late July, August, if we're still doing this,
it's too late to be alarmed.
Because he's in a program now, so you can monitor him every day now. You can work with him every day, and if he still is going through this in late July, then we need to really talk about it. We need to really sit down and say, hey, listen, this may end up being a problem.
Mark in Ashland City says, Desmond Watson, 6'5", 464.
That's the big kid from Florida, right?
Yeah, the Florida D lineman.
Man, when that dude was 464?
4.
Is that documented? Is that
he looks all of 464 when you see him on the field. This dude 464, is massive.
That is what he's listed at.
Oh my
god. He's massive.
It couldn't
man.
Even be more if that's what he's listed
and
at.
And he looks like 564 in the 21 jersey.
Yeah.
Just because if you wear 21 look and you're that big, you look twice as big.
Those are linebackers next to him. And the linebackers look like
DBs.
They look like little itty bitty little toddlers.
Is he still playing for Florida?
Yeah. He's still playing because he was a freshman last year, I believe.
Good grief.
He
464?
464.
I don't know how in the hell he's moving around at 464, but damn it, if we can get him down to 364, he's going to be a monster.
Last year, he played at 439.
Wow. So he's gained weight.
He's gained weight.
Purposely?
How can you be? Yeah. If you lose weight, brother, there ain't going to be nobody that can mess with you. If you're playing at a level at that big, man, oh, man. Just think if we can get you an
ideal weight.
Is
that a record? Is that the highest on record of a player? Obviously he's a good player. Like, I'm wondering what is the record for the heaviest player to
in the
step
NFL
on the field? Anywhere.
I don't know, man.
Both, like college.
Big Sean Gilbert was big for Green
obviously
Bay.
If you're 6'9", it's a little easier.
Yeah,
to have,
but Sean Gilbert wasn't. I think Sean Gilbert was like 6'4".
Sean Gilbert comes to mind. But what 6'5"? Was he over 400?
I don't think he was over 400. But he was a wide individual.
Sam Adams,
individual.
Is that on a website somewhere?
Heaviest players in NFL history.
Yeah. I'm like, man.
I don't see any 400-pounders on that
list. Yeah, I don't think there's been a 400-pounder.
I don't know why RG3 pops up on the list.
What? You sure that's not RG1?
Looks like Aaron Gibson at 375.
Yeah, Big Gibbs. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Is he left tackle or right tackle?
He was a right tackle,
a right
I believe.
Tackle. At 375. Ted Washington, 375.
Yeah, big
Carolina. The official weight for that is 410.
His official weight?
For Gibson, 410. Okay. Aaron Gibson.
Oh, 410?
Yeah, that's what it says here. It says he weighed
in
at
Wikipedia
410.
Is lying.
But the heaviest active player is 380, which is him. So 5 pounds extra. I mean, who cares?
Jeez.
God, some big.
Large.
Y'all said 464 earlier.
464.
That's what they said on the internet. I guess the internet.
That's a lot of burgers.
The internet never lies.
That's a store. That's a restaurant you're eating.
That's a bus.
Yeah, you're eating. You're just going in there. You're like, and I know you younger guys probably don't remember this. Willie, you probably do. You do. The Fat Boys. The group,
oh, yeah.
And they made the video, All You Can Eat. I loved, like, the Fat Boys when I was growing up, that was my group. Me and my two friends in middle school, it was Kurotsky, who else was it? Who was the human beatbox, and then I forgot the other guy name. But we all had who we were. It was three of us, and that was our little group. So I loved the Fat Boys back then. But they had this video, All You Can Eat, and one of the guys, Buff, who was the beatbox guy, he went to the buffet line, was just eating everything.
That was the video?
It was the video, yeah. Them just going to a all-you-can-eat buffet and eating everything. Like, they ate the whole store out where the people had to kick them out.
When you see three guys coming up to a buffet, and all the manager's got to be 300. Like, hitting, like, jaws got to drop, like, oh, we are in trouble.
No.
Somebody please change that sign quickly to not all you can eat,
It's a curb your enthusiasm.
To add
Leon goes to the all you can eat, and he hits the limit. They kick him out.
To add fuel to the Trevor Maddich fire this week, when he was on with Jared, he said, Tavondre Sweat is hurt? How? Speed eating at a buffet?
Oh, yeah, I heard.
I've got a bunch of your Titans minicamp thoughts, Tavondre Sweat thoughts. Everything is on the table, what we heard from Brian Callahan. Again, Tavondre Sweat and Nicholas Petit Frere not out on the practice field today. We talk a lot about Sweat. I'm not too happy about Nicholas Petit-Frere not being out on the field either. So we'll get into you coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Become a sponsor of the tournament or register a team and join the 615 Open. Proceeds will help raise money for Souls for Souls. Sponsorship packages could include email campaigns, commercials, radio advertising, and so much more. Learn more about our different packages and how you can support a good cause at 615open.com. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Put the food on my plate, add some coke in my cup. Give me some chicken, Frank Savage, living past me a letter. Tavondre Sweat's theme song. I'm shoveling onto my plate. Give me some sweet satellite cake. Give me some hot mac. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan. Today is the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats at home. Pre-game at 6:20 p.m., first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
We got to enjoy the video.
Yes.
During the D-Maze pulled it up, and there was no food left at the all-you-can-eat buffet.
They even took the cheese off the wall and everything else.
And I believe they mentioned the price, and there was only $3.99. Pretty good deal. That was, late 80s?
Yeah, you ain't getting nothing for $3.99 no more.
1985. I was born in the wrong era, ladies and gentlemen. I would be a heavy man by now.
A cup of coffee costs more than $3.99.
This is a fair life question, though, because I feel like offensive lines have, or maybe defensive lines, have tested this at times, but can an all-you-can-eat manager come out and toss you for just taking too much advantage of the audience?
I think they can. Yeah. There's curb
your enthusiasm. That's what happened. Leon got thrown out. Leon threw a fit. He was not happy. Larry David was welcome to stay. Leon, you're out of here. And there's this whole thing. You can't throw me out.
You can't.
It's all you can eat. I paid for the all you can eat. So is it okay at some point if the person's taking advantage to?
Yeah, I think you can.
Give them the hook?
Yeah.
It's a pretty high threshold.
Yeah.
But if you're getting to that threshold, then, you need to go.
Yeah.
If I offer to pay again? I'll pay again so I can eat again? Is that?
And they're still bringing in money. Yeah. I mean, you do make a valid point.
Do I get a reset if I just, I'll pay $3.99 again?
Nope, you're out.
Nah,
you're still gone?
Yeah. You got to go because.
Willie, you know what I think?
Because
you
had no food left.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The Fat Boys, they cleaned them out. They didn't have anything.
I ain't making no money.
You hand them a $10 bill underneath the table. I'm like, oh, okay, that's two more. I got it. That's fine. How I would do it. I'm just saying.
Speaking of all you can eat, we've got some thoughts on Tavondre Sweat.
Okay.
So let's get to your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have a thought, phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in and says, I can guarantee it's a soft tissue problem. Too much soft tissue. Which, touche, Jason in Kentucky.
I got you, Jason.
This was the whole thing after the draft when we said, are we a little concerned about Tavondre Sweat's weight? And everyone said, no, no, no. He played at that weight in Texas. It's going to be fine. Everything is going to be fine. And if, in fact, he's not on the field because he can't be on the field because he's overweight, well, this was the concern in the first place. So don't tell me I'm overreacting.
Yeah, I mean it has to be. You want to get a handle of it before it becomes a problem. Right now it's a concern. It's just a minor concern. How do we work through this? The program that he's on, he's not going to lose, 15, 20 pounds in a week or two. I mean, there's things you can do that you probably could lose that much, but that's not a healthy way to do it. This is going to take some time for him because it's a lifestyle now for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a fad. I got to lose weight for the next month and then just to get it. No, this is a lifestyle for you now, Sweat. You have to keep your weight under control. Your NFL career depends on whether you can keep your weight down to a playable weight, because if you can't, then the problem is, if you can't keep yourself below that weight or good playing weight, you're going to have a short career. Mm-hmm. Because of your weight, but not necessarily because of your weight, it's your injuries now.
Yeah.
It's going to take longer for you to heal, being such a large man.
I understand that it's difficult. Mm-hmm. Exactly. We're all tongue-in-cheek and joking around. Yeah. I understand. It's difficult, and every single person is different, mm-hmm. but his career depends on it.
Yes, and that's why I think I'm trying to I have the same concerns everybody else does. I think from the minute he's picked, and I think you have a lot of people who cover the draft say there were teams that did not have him on the board because he was too much of a risk, especially that high in the second round. Right? It's one thing to take a fifth rounder, but for the Titans to jump out there for the second round, I think that's why it's heightened. This is your second round pick, and you knew about all of these question marks. So I'm trying to tamper down my concerns, and I'm trying to look at what they're trying to do. You're trying to build a foundation. You're trying to build habits. If that costs you several practices in June, in the long term, nobody's going to worry about it, right? But if you're building those effective habits, if you're out of the gate with bad habits and you re-injure something, or, you know, I do see. So I'm going to be patient as much as I can with this. But that doesn't mean we're not going to have concerns, but I don't know that I can't question what they're doing right now. You can't just say, get out there. Yeah. If you've got a soft tissue injury, that's the worst thing you can do.
I think that, of course, any team in any league is going to be very tight-lipped, but sometimes I do wonder that, you know, the more ambiguous you are about an explanation about something, the more you enter room for interpretation, and that can be incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't expect the Titans to come out and be like, okay, here are all of Tavondre Sweat's medicals, here's the blood work, here's exactly what he's going through. But it does kind of do the player a disservice whenever you're saying, oh, it's minor, don't worry about it, and he's out for 3 weeks.
I don't think the Titans are concerned about that. And they shouldn't be, honestly, because if I was a head coach, I wouldn't be concerned about the perception of my young player at this particular time, because we have a plan in place, and I don't want to, you're not gonna, I don't, me explaining our plan isn't going to, you know, deter you from saying what you're going to say regardless. Mm-hmm. We have a plan for this young man. We're not going to specify what the plan is, but there is a plan. And like Willie said, the plan may cause for him to miss some days where, yeah, he's not working out on the field with the players, but he's behind the scenes getting the work in that he needs to get in, because this is going to help us in the process of him dropping weight. It's not going to help us to throw him out there and then he gets hurt. And now when he's hurt, he can't do anything. Mm-hmm. Can't run, can't get on elliptical, can't do anything to help lose the weight along with the nutrition. So let's bring him on slowly. Yes, it's minor, but, you know, we can deal with the minor injury and help him drop the weight that he needs to drop. But if we throw him back out there, he ends up getting hurt again. Now it's just,
I wouldn't be asking the Titans to throw him out there just to appease all of us and see, look, see, he's fine. I'm just saying clarity.
Yeah, yeah.
It provides more explanation as to what's going on.
I'm always a believer that as clear as you can be is helpful, I think, especially in June.
Yeah.
But I don't think they care right now.
It's one thing if you've got a game on Sunday and you don't want people to know whether he's going to play or not.
That's different.
That's different. Like in June, I know you don't have to say anything about anybody, but I don't know. Sometimes I think it's helpful.
Coaches are very coy. Even as open and upfront Coach Callahan has been, it's still a lot of things he keep close to the vest.
Yeah.
I mean, rightfully so.
Another texter says, my problem with Sweat isn't that he's injured. It's the fact that the Titans took him where they did with the red flags, and now the red flags are starting to show.
Yes.
This isn't new territory.
It's compounded by that.
Exactly. If the concerns about him to begin with, and then you get kind of confirmation for having those concerns, that's an uncomfortable feeling. That's where hysteria starts to grow a little bit. The texter continues to say, this isn't new territory for the Titans because they've made stupid mistakes in the past, and it just seems like they aren't learning or going in a new direction with Sweat presenting as hurt. What we can't do is hold Rand Carthon responsible for the decisions of John Robinson. We are all jaded for the Isaiah Wilson pick, really the entirety of the 2021 draft, of Caleb Farley, and then really that 2021 draft hasn't given you a whole lot. I get it. We're all a little bit sensitive about it, but Rand Carthon did not make those picks. But what you don't want to see is this regime making some of the same mistakes of the last regime that got this team in the place that it is right now.
Yeah, you don't want to see that happen, but I'm not beholden to, you know, blame this particular staff and front office for what happened with the last coaching staff in front office. This is a new slate for them. And, you know, listen, you only have so many opportunities, you know, and if you got to understand because of what, I am not going to hold them to it, but because of what has happened in the past.
We're sensitive.
With the regime prior to yours, a lot of people are sensitive to that, not necessarily blaming, you know, Rand and Brian and everybody else, but it's we're sensitive because they've done this before, this organization. But it's not like they've done what every organization in the National Football League has done at one point in time in their long story careers, history as far as the NFL. You've always taken a chance on a hurt guy. Every team in the National Football League has done that more than once. Take a flyer on a guy that has been injured. And you hoping because of his talent that he doesn't display those injuries moving forward.
Jeffrey Simmons.
And Jeffrey Simmons is one.
Worked out.
I can go to Willis McGahee. Mm-hmm. Blew out his knee his senior year. If you were just basing it on his injury, nobody would have touched him.
Yeah.
But Buffalo drafted him at the end of the first round, and he became a hell of a back. So you have instances like that. That's why I say this is not just a Tennessee Titan thing. This is a NFL thing in regards to injured players and taking, you know, chances on injured players to have a high upside.
The Colts took Laiatulatu out of UCLA. Mm-hmm.
He had neck issues. Yeah.
He already medically retired or considering medically retiring?
Yeah, he had some people telling him he should, and then he had some other people saying, you know, keep playing.
Massive.
Keep playing, yeah. So.
Big risk
there.
That's
a big question.
That's a big question. But unfortunately, it's kind of reared its ugly head with the Titans. All right, coming up next, Allie Melnicki, our friend from Zen Sports, will give us her best bets of the weekend. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We've got NBA Finals starting tonight. We've got the Stanley Cup Finals starting on Saturday. We've got a jam-packed weekend full of playoff hockey and basketball. So joining us now to give us her best bets of the weekend is our friend Allie Melnicki from Zen Sports. Allie, appreciate you for joining us as always. Let's start with the most recent. Let's start with the NBA Finals. Mavs and Celtics Game 1. Let's just look at this game before we look at the series as a whole. Who do you like in Game 1?
I'm actually going to go with the Mavericks. I know there's a hot team right now. I know the Celtics might have a little more time with the rest, but the Mavs, they've been hot this whole postseason. They remind me a lot of when the Nuggets got hot last year. So I'm going to go with the Mavericks, up at the Celtics at home.
In terms of the series, who wins and in how many games?
I think we're going to see a long one. I think at least a 6 or 7 games. I'm going to still ride the Mavericks. Like I said, I love the whole Kyrie Irving revenge factor. I love seeing the chemistry that him and Luka have come together. I think they're hungrier. We've seen the Celtics collapse in this case before, especially when they played the Warriors a couple of years ago. So I'm going to go with the Mavs.
Now, Allie, odds on who wins the MVP of this series. Who's leading? Is it Luka? Is it Tatum? Is it Kyrie? Jaylen Brown? Who's leading the MVP race for this series, for the MVP?
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at Jason Tatum's obviously favored because Celtics are favored. So obviously people know that the winning team, usually the MVP comes from the winning team. But Luka's not far behind him. And Jason Tatum's at minus 115. Luka's at plus 205. I like the value with Luka, so I'm going to go with Luka.
Now, what other prop bets are there for this game? Because I'm sure there are a few, especially when you're talking about scoring and individuals each and every game.
Sure. Besides just the game, we have series pricing still going on until tip-off. We have props like, will Jason Tatum score 25-plus points in all the games in the series? Will Luka Doncic be the top scorer at the end of the series? So a lot of scoring props, and people really like that.
Exciting stuff. How about the Stanley Cup Final? Who do you have as the favorite, and what kind of vision are you seeing now based on how the bets are coming in?
You know, it's pretty even for the series pricing. Edmonton is at plus 108, so slight underdogs, but Florida's at minus 130, so not totally big favorites. This is probably as even as a series as you're going to get. I'm truly really excited for this one. I like the Panthers, though, overall. I mean, I think they're just hungrier, given that they were in the Cup last year and then lost to the Golden Knights. It's always fun seeing the Oilers play, but I'm going to go with the Panthers. But I do think this one goes a full seven games.
That's a lot of air miles between those two cities, too. Holy cow.
A lot.
If it goes seven, that's
travel.
A lot of flights.
A lot of travel, indeed.
What is the odds that this series goes seven?
Well, I don't have those in front of me, but if I were to take a guess, that I think they're pretty good that it's going to go all seven. Mm-hmm. I mean, these teams, again, they're just so evenly, they're so evenly matched. It's just tough to see a sweep or even a gentleman sweep on this one.
We also got some championship series going on the college side as well. Just curious, Allie, do you have Women's College World Series odds on the Zen Sportsbook app?
We don't yet, but we're looking to offer it hopefully soon.
Got it. Oklahoma, one win away from their fourth World Series in a row. So what about baseball? Tennessee taking on Evansville. I mean, the odds have got to be very much so tilted in their favor, at least to get to Omaha.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to go. I mean, we're seeing in our sports books a lot of people are back in the home team and everything. It's Tennessee. It's Falls Country. You know, today they're big favorites. So, or tomorrow, I mean, for their game, they're big favorites against Evansville. So it's going to be a fun college one, though.
Lynn, looking at these two series, NBA and NHL, over, under, what do you like there?
Ooh, I think, well, let's go with tonight's game. I mean, the total sitting at 216.5. I think this one's going to be a low-scoring game. We've seen a lot of low-scoring games with the Celtics. I think these teams might have a little rust with the big layoff. I mean, the Celtics haven't played in, what, over a week? So I'm leaning with the under for tonight's game.
Allie, you are the best. Appreciate you for stopping by. We'll catch up next week.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Allie Melnicki from Zen Sports. And that is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love all your people. Have a terrific Thursday and peace.